You're listening to The Takeaway from Public Radio International and WNYC in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
From political competition in Florida, thinking about the GOP primary in that state, to political upheaval in the Middle East. Earlier this hour, we were speaking about the controversy over Islam and Muslim Americans playing out in a small but controversial way in the state of Florida and that GOP primary. In Egypt, though, the grasp for a new democratic nation has meant a full embrace of some Islamic parties. Two so-called Islamist parties together have won more than 60% of the seats in the new constitution-writing assembly in Egypt. The majority, although it is not clear if they will form any kind of coalition, raises the issue of whether Egypt will be a secular nation or a theocratic state or some hybrid 21st century mix of state and clergy. With some guidance to help us is Michael Waheed Hanna, a good friend of the program, fellow at the Century Foundation. Michael, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
So what do you make of this? I mean, it's so easy, and we were actually talking earlier about how easy it is for Americans and people in the mainstream media to slip into alarmist tones about talking about this. But there have been many people on the program that have described very eloquently that the pathway to democracy in Egypt necessarily must pass through a confrontation between the Islamist Muslim Brotherhood and the secular army, and that's what we're seeing playing out here. Is it more than that?
I think it is more than that. I think that is something of a simplification. There has been an assumption that once the Muslim Brothers had established themselves in parliament, that we would see an ensuing clash with the military. And I don't think that's going to happen. There are real incentives on both sides, both on the military's part, the Supreme Council of the Armed Forces, which is the interim ruling authority, and the Muslim Brotherhood to avoid that kind of confrontation. And I think we're moving more towards an accommodation in the near term and something much less than was expected in terms of a clash between Islamists and military.
What do you make of the two parties that are represented? And, you know, I'm loosely categorizing these two parties, the Ikhwan Muslimin, the Muslim Brothers, and the Noor Party. What are their differences? What are their similarities?
Well, I mean, the Noor Party, Salafis didn't engage in politics. It was perhaps the biggest difference among Islamists. The Muslim Brotherhood has been engaged in the political process and has been trying to form a political party for many years. That split, obviously, is in the past, but the brothers have been acclimated to political life. The Salafis have not, and they obviously have much more hardline views, and they're an unknown commodity. They have no political experience, and they are much more rigid in their thinking. The interaction between the brothers and the Salafis is one of the key dynamics that I think people will have an eye on to see if, in fact, this pushes the brothers toward moderation or if it drags them into cultural issues and religious issues to try to guard their right flank from being seen as it abandoning maybe some of the core Islamist goals. And that would be the pull from the Salafis. So that's something that people will have an eye on.
Michael Waheed Hanna is a fellow at the Century Foundation. We're speaking with him from Cairo. We also want to get a look on the ground from David Kirkpatrick, Cairo bureau chief for our partner, The New York Times. Welcome to the program, David.
It's good to be back.
David, you know, in reporting from Egypt, there's always the challenge of getting out of the bubble of secularized English-speaking elites in Cairo who can express all kinds of worries about things. I'm wondering if you could describe for us who in Cairo is expressing relief about what's going on and who might be expressing some anxiety. David, if you're still there.
Well, I think right now it's mostly relief, as Michael said. You know, certainly the large number of ultra-conservative Salafis that was elected to parliament was a bit of a surprise to everybody, including the Muslim Brothers. But right now, I think the liberal forces, the minuscule number of liberals here...
David, we're going to have to interrupt you there. There's an international tone on your line that's conflicting with your voice there. Michael, just why don't you take that question? Who's sighing relief and who's full of anxiety about what's going on?
Well, I mean, I think one thing that's important to keep in mind is when we think about the protest movement is what that represents. And I think it's always represented something of a minority. And the instability that we've seen over the past year since the toppling of Mubarak and some of the security concerns and the economic concerns have generated some anxiety among wide swaths of the Egyptian public. So I do think there is a lot of relief among some quarters that we're going toward something that looks more like normalization. And so I think a lot of regular Egyptians are relieved to see some progress in transition and wanting to see some greater stability at the moment.
In terms of voices that are influential within Egypt, there's certainly been many military figures and all of the presidents of Egypt, at least in the time of my career, have been military figures coming out of Egypt. I'm wondering if there's any motivation for the Muslim Brothers or the Nour Party to reach out to the West and be sort of voices that express the political future in Egypt along with some of the more familiar voices that we've heard from for more than a generation now.
Well, I think that's absolutely the case. I mean, the brothers have made a very concerted push to reach out to foreign embassies. They've had very high-profile contacts with the United States, be it Senator Kerry when he was in Egypt, Undersecretary Burns, Ambassador Patterson. So I think they are cognizant of wanting to reach out and to portray a picture of moderation and an ability to get along with the rest of the world. So I think they've been quite clear in making that message known. The Salafis are edging in that direction, and they are engaging in contacts. But, you know, the thing, you see this very clearly in how much more acclimated the brothers are to the process. They've been in parliament before. They have well-tuned platforms. It's a very different political machine, and you see that in terms of their relations with the rest of the world.
Well, let's turn it around then. You've talked about the incentives for the Islamist parties to reach out to the West. I would think there would be as many incentives, if not more, for the U.S., long associated with dealing with the military, to reach out to some of these parties. And I'm wondering if there is a political coin to be minted here on the part of some of these Islamist parties to declare the United States as being thrown in with the military. Can the U.S. really portray itself as an even broker among all these various groups?
Well, I mean, I think the United States is dealing with reality. You know, this is Egypt now. This is the Egyptian political scene. And it's not possible to simply just deal with the military. And I think you've seen that shift. I mean, people have made a bigger deal of this than is necessary. It has to happen. And now the United States is building ties with new groups, with new figures. And this is a reflection of the internal balance of power here in Egypt. I don't think that that there's going to be much issue between the military or the Muslim Brotherhood, say, in terms of these new relationships. I think it's a natural evolution, particularly because I don't see any big clash coming between the military and the brothers.
Although,
so
wouldn't the brothers,
but business as usual.
Let me interrupt you, though. Wouldn't the brothers want to do something different with all of that military aid money that comes from the United States than, say, the military council would?
Well, I don't think we're going to see a huge confrontation at this juncture on foreign policy issues. I think moving towards a French-style mixed system where more national security prerogatives are vested within the presidential system, I think will allow the brothers in this next coming stage to avoid some of the more problematic and messy issues of foreign policy and national security. And I think that's going to be part of the accommodation we're going to see between the military and the Brotherhood with respect to the constitutional drafting process. So I think they will be able to avoid many of the more sort of radioactive issues and focus more on the parliament and the running of the country. And I think that's going to be part of the coming accommodation. I think obviously we'll see more heated rhetoric on foreign policy issues in parliament, but I don't think parliament is going to be the place where foreign policy decisions are going to be determined finally.
Next landmark on the writing of that constitution before we go?
Well, we have it's unclear how constitution drafting and presidential elections will be linked. It appears that we are looking at presidential elections in June and a real intent on the part of the military council to want to have a constitution wrapped up before that time. So we could see a constitution very soon in the next couple of months, a referendum on that constitution, and then presidential elections sometime in June, and a planned handover of authority, as it's now stated, to a president and a parliament from the military council before the end of June.
That's
so
a tall
that's
order
kind of
there.
The political calendar coming up.
Indeed, an auspicious moment of change, 2012, there in Egypt. Michael Waheed Hanna is a fellow at the Century Foundation. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And, of course, auspicious change is what the Chinese New Year is all about. We've been talking all morning about the Year of the Dragon, the Water Dragon. It's a very lucky year to be born, a time of auspicious change. A listener named Johnny Sue posted this to our Facebook page. I'd like to see more middle of the road than polarization, not just in politics, but everywhere. I'd like to see more compassion and less sensationalism. Your call for what needs to happen during the Year of the Dragon. I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.